Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm Mike Holt, CEO of Restore Australia. What does Restore Australia stand for? We have three simple goals. The first is to amend section 128 of the Australian Constitution to give all voters the right to initiate referendums. Right now, only the politicians have this power, and they are not doing the job. Our second aim is to involve all Australians in writing a whole new Australian constitution, written by the people, for the people. And our third aim is to stop the spread of Islam in our nation. We believe Islam is diametrically opposed to everything we stand for, and therefore it has no place in our nation. But we don't hate anybody. We don't even hate Muslims. We are fueled by love. Love of our culture, love of our freedom, and love for our nation. But we are also concerned at the direction our political system has taken us. We believe it's time for a real change for the system. Ours is an idea whose time has come. We are not alone. People all over the world are waking up and realizing that the two-party system we have been governed by for so long has failed. At Restore Australia, we believe that change must start with the basic law of our land, the Constitution. I hope you will enjoy the show. But even more importantly, I hope that we will get you thinking about what you can do to bring about a better future for our country and our children. And hello there from Australia. It's a beautiful day here, and I hope it's a lovely day over there for you too. We're broadcasting around the world, and we're reaching people in places I never thought we would. So welcome aboard. I just want to talk first of all this morning about an email I received from an Indian friend of mine, and we've been discussing the Islamic problem, and apparently it's very bad over there too. And as usual, the Muslims are causing trouble, complaining about this, that, and the other thing. He says they're even complaining in India about the national slogan. It's un-Islamic. Hello? We don't care what you guys think. If you can't accept it, pull your heads in. We don't care. That's it. Full stop. We have a problem here in Australia, which thankfully our present government has put a stop to, and that was the boat people. The Australian Labor Party, allied with the Greens, a bunch of communist idiots, were letting anybody come in through our borders. Now, we have borders for a reason. They're to keep out the riffraff, the scum, the rubbish. But unfortunately, the Greens and the ALP let anybody in through by coming by boat. And as a result, more than 1,500 people died, drowned when their boats sank. These boats were just Indonesian fishing vessels, some of them very unseaworthy, and they were overcrowded. Women, children, men, all died when these boats sank. Now, the Abbott government, which is in power now, has stopped the boats. And Minister Morrison, our immigration minister, has just said, that's enough. You're not getting in, and we're not going to let you ever in ever again. If you come here by boat, you will be sent to another place offshore, where you will sit in a refugee camp, and you can either stay there for the rest of your life or you can go back home. Now, most of these people coming, trying to get to Australia, had money in their pockets. They could afford to pay $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 for a boat captain to bring them here. So they had money, and they probably still do have money, and yet they're leeching off us. It costs 500,000 Australian tax dollars a year to feed, house and clothe these illegal invaders. Why are we wasting the money on it? Well, today, a group calling themselves Buddies for Refugees or something silly are going to have a rally outside one of our politicians' offices here on the Sunshine Coast. And a whole bunch of us will be down there with placards showing Australians that we don't want them here. We do not support the boat people. We do not support refugees who try to get here illegally. Of course, we support people who come here properly through the legal channels. They fly in, they have all their paperwork done, and they come here intending to be good Australian citizens. The problem with the boat people was they were criminals. They weren't coming here to be good Australian citizens. They were coming here to leech off the system. Well, that's been put a stop to. Unfortunately, the ALP set up these offshore processing centres, one of them on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea. And a couple of weeks ago, a young Iranian man, Reza Barati, died in a riot. Now, they've been pointing the finger all over the place, but the fact is the Muslims in the detention centre started rioting. And as a result, they broke out, they broke down the fence, they assaulted the guards, and they also assaulted local PNG people, Manus Islanders. And in the fighting, one of the detainees killed Reza Barati. We don't know why yet. There is an inquiry going on. But the problem is this young man died because he was a criminal. He came here illegally, and the ALP and the Greens have his blood on their hands, as well as the blood of 1,500 other people. So let's put this in a little bit of perspective. You know, these people that are going to be down there today in support of the refugees are saying that we should let them all in. Okay, so imagine you hear a knock on your door and you open it and a bedraggled-looking man is standing there, his clothes are torn, and he begs you to let him into your house. What do you do? You just open the door and invite him in? You don't know who he is or where he came from. You don't know if the reasons he gives you for getting into your house are real or not. So you ask for some identity. He has none. Are you going to let him in? I doubt it. He would call the police. And the same applies to these boat people who came here claiming to be refugees. They turned up on our doorstep with no identity, having destroyed their passport before getting on a boat. A boat they had paid tens of thousands of dollars to get onto in the first place. And before that, they had to fly into Indonesia, another cost of at least $1,000, quite possibly more if they came with a family, as they would have had costs associated with leaving their home country as well. And if they could afford the plane fare to fly over several countries to get to Indonesia and then pay a people smuggler as well, I'm afraid these people do not fit the definition of a genuine refugee flying for their life. A refugee flees and goes to a country and asks for asylum. They don't go to a third country and try and jump on a boat to get here illegally. And that's the problem, isn't it? So we'll be down there today on the corner of Nicklin Way and Point Cartwright Avenue. And we will have our placards out there. We'll be there at 3:30 outside the Kawana Waters Hotel in the car park there. So if you're around, please come and join us. We'll have a permit today. I'm going down to the police station. That's all arranged. And we will hold our placards up on the side of Nicklin Way, where all the traffic is, telling Australians that we don't approve of letting illegal aliens into our country. So come down, join us 3:30 outside the Kawana Waters Hotel car park. And I will explain what we're going to do and how we're going to work, because we have to do it within the law. It'll be a peaceful protest. And we'd like to see you down there. So come and support us and let's get the word out there. Most Australians do not support illegal boat people. Now, good morning, Kel. I would like to thank my lovely producer for stepping in this morning to talk to me about something that I think you feel very strongly about. Could you tell me what it is, please, Kel?
I feel strongly about all sorts of things. But one thing in particular that has really gotten to me this week is that I think Hang on just one sec. We were talking about something in particular. I can't remember which one, though, that you wanted me to discuss exactly, because there's a lot of things.
You had that page yesterday about Canada.
Oh, about the airports.
That's right.
Yeah, that is a fascinating story. And, I was talking with Mike about this. There was a story out of Canada. And that these Muslims, they wanted to have a prayer room established in Saskatoon, and that's in Saskatchewan. And the names Mohammed Ash-Sharif and Mohammed Shakif, they went to the airport authority. They're cab drivers, is what they are, and they wanted a prayer room established for them so that they could do their five prayers a day, which is, you know, condemning the infidel five times a day. And the airport, the CEO of the airport said no. And so they're having little fits here. Stephen Mayberry, president and CEO of the Saskatoon Airport Authority, says despite a recent string of renovations at the airport, there is simply no room for a multi-faith space. Now, this is what they were calling for. Is that, Mike, they were calling for a multi-faith prayer room. But we know what happens when airports set up the so-called ecumenical prayer rooms for people, is that the Muslims immediately take it over. I've talked about this in the past, and what's happened at the Pearson International Airport in Toronto is that they set up a multi-faith prayer room. But the Muslims, the taxi drivers, they go there and they leave their Korans and their prayer mats lying around all over the place. They're like dogs marking their territory. Now, I think that this a particular person, Stephen Mayberry, president and CEO of the airport authority, in saying no, I think that he had probably seen this around other airports in the past and just said no. In terms of our facilities, we have not considered that and are not designating any space, because he is saying that we just don't have the We can't optimize space for that here. This is not the type of airport in which there would be a lot of need for that. And he essentially said no. So what's going to happen next? I have a funny feeling, Mike. I know exactly what's going to happen next. They're going to take them to the Human Rights Tribunal and say that they were discriminated against because of their religion.
Yeah. I'm sure they're going to do something. But we have a very novel solution to these prayer rooms down here in Australia, and we haven't actually publicized it yet, but people around Australia are going out to our farmers and getting pig's blood, and we're making sprays, and we're just going around the airports and the other facilities, because they're also at our sports facilities. Some of our big sports grounds now have Muslim prayer rooms. If they're going to watch the sports, let's go and watch the sports, never mind your bloody prayers. But
mm-hmm.
our activists are going around and they're praying, spraying the door handles with pig blood. And they don't even know yet. But when the word gets out, as it is now, I think the Muslims are going to get a little bit worried about even touching the doors to their prayer rooms.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, look, you know, we've had enough of this rubbish. You know, I mean, these Muslims are pushing and pushing and trying to get as many concessions for their silly religion as possible. How silly is it? I mean, come on. This is a guy, Muhammad, who started this religion, and he was in touch with his so-called Allah. Now, Allah was a very kind man, because every time Muhammad had a bit of a lust for some woman, especially if she was married, Allah would make a law and tell Allah, you can do this now because I said you can. And so he would make the man divorce the wife, even killed one man that I know of. He was allowed to marry young girls as young as 7 years old, and he consummated the marriage when the poor girl was 9 years old. That was Aisha. I mean, this is a guy who for years tried to get his religion going, and he only had about 12 followers, and most of those were his family. And it wasn't until he became a warlord and started killing people and saying, you convert or else, that Islam started to spread. It's a violent ideology. It is not a religion. And that's why we are fighting against it. Now, I had, as I said this morning earlier, I had an email from my friend in India, and he says they're over there doing the same thing. They're making causing trouble and trying to get all these concessions to their ideology. And as I told him, I said, well, do what we're doing here in Australia. We are resisting. And why are we doing it? For our children. I don't want my daughters growing up having to wear a black bag.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, you had a question from Bigfoot. Where are these illegals coming from?
Yeah. Like you were saying that they fly from all over the place. They land in Indonesia and then they boat themselves over to Australia. Who are the majority of these illegals? Where exactly are they coming from?
They're coming from the Middle East, and they're coming from all over the Middle East, but predominantly from Iran, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Some of them are actually coming from Sri Lanka. Now, when did the war in Sri Lanka finish? I think it was about 10 years ago. So these are not real, genuine refugees. They are economic refugees. They're coming here because, first of all, they know the previous government gave them generous handouts, our tax money, and they were housed and fed and clothed and helped to settle in Australia. The only problem was the ones that got in did not settle in Australia. They formed enclaves, and they refused to integrate. They built their mosques, and as soon as they build a mosque, of course, land values go down. The Australian people living around that area all want to move out because five times a day they call the prayers. They cause problems in the street with parking. They get aggressive. And, of course, while they're doing that and the housing prices are coming down, the Australians are desperate to move out and they can't sell. So what the Muslims do is they go along quite often, not all the time. They don't always do it. But they will take a satchel of money along to the house owner and say, here is our offer, and it's probably about two-thirds less than the actual value of the house before the mosque. And they say, you can move now, or we will force you out anyway. So what's the poor house owner going to do? Takes the money and runs. And there is another house in the area that now can be lived in by Muslims. And this is how they do it. And they're doing it in the UK, they're doing it in Europe, they're doing it in America, not so much in America yet, but they are. They're doing it in Canada, and they're doing it here, doing it in New Zealand, although New Zealand doesn't have much of a problem yet, but it's only a matter of time. These people are going wherever they can and causing trouble. So it's time for us to stand up and say, I can make a difference. And that's all it takes. You don't have to do much. All you have to do is say, I can make a difference inside your own heart, and then think, what can I do? Well, there are websites around like restoreaustralia.org.au. What's the one in America that's very famous, Bill? Infidels something?
Infidels are... You know what, Mike?
Friend.
I'm not too sure.
Yeah. Anyway, there are websites around. And
do you mean Bare Naked Islam?
Yeah, Bare Naked Islam. That's the one.
Okay,
that's
about that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Pamela Geller, isn't it?
Pamela Geller is Atlas Shrugs, and Robert Spencer is Jihad Watch.
Okay, so they're all good websites to go and have a look at,
mm-hmm.
because they can plenty of information. It's Bare Naked Islam, Jihad Watch, Restore Australia. We all have some very excellent videos and information about Islam. If you don't know anything about Islam now, go and learn, because if you don't, you will die. These people will take over and you will not even know what happened. Get out there and fight. Fight for your children. Fight for their children. Fight for the future. We cannot allow Islam to take over. It's a 1,400-year ideology that hasn't progressed one inch in all that time. It's still a backward, stupid ideology. And I don't like to call it a religion. It's not. So these people are coming from all over there. They fly to Indonesia, which is a Muslim country, don't forget. Why don't they stay there? Because the Indonesian Muslims don't want them. They help put them on these boats and send them to Australia. And now they've lost the income. And they were making millions of dollars. So, yeah. Oh, another good one is the religionofpeace.com. That's a great website. Now, all our North American and UK listeners, you can hear my show at 4 p.m. EDT as your clocks are going ahead this week. been a bit behind us, have you? Same thing in New South Wales and Victoria. Your clocks are going ahead, so you're catching up with Queensland now. And it's 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in Australia. I was talking online yesterday, and I asked a few people if they would like to send some messages to our military boys in Afghanistan fighting for our freedom. Now, most of our troops have actually pulled out of Afghanistan, I'm very proud to say, but we still have a few. Our American cousins have lots of troops still there, and Canadians too, I believe. Is that right, Kel?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely correct, Mike.
All right. Well, I gathered a few messages, so I'd like to read those out. One person, Nene, quoted Winston Churchill, "We sleep safely at night because rough men stand ready to visit violence on those who would harm us." How true. David Hoppenset says, "To all the members in all armed forces in Afghanistan, thank you all for putting your lives on the line and sacrificing your time away from your loved ones for the freedom of an enslaved race. Please accept this message from all peace-loving and free peoples and stay safe. We wish you all a speedy return." And Sharon Lisbeth, "Thank you all to all the service people in Afghanistan for trying to help free the people from a culture that is surrounded by death, mayhem, female brutality, and child abuse. We can only hope that the people of Afghanistan have learned that peace is the way of the future so that we may all live in harmony." John Crowther says, "Come home safely, fellas. Please, no more post-mortems to be seen." Jason Tatchell, "To the US, British and Canadian troops and personnel still serving abroad, Australia stands with you now and forever." And we have a few more. I can't read them all out here, but that's the general feeling of Australians and people back home. So all you troops serving overseas, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We do think about you all the time. We worry about your safety. Come home safe. Come home to your loved ones. And hopefully you will leave Afghanistan in a better state. But you know, they're all Muslims too. We don't know what will happen. I think it's time that we have a little bit of fun, don't you, Phil? And this week, Mighty Mo.
I do.
Mighty Mo is flying his big steed, Al Murat, into Jerusalem. Oh, boy. That's going to be interesting. Let's have a listen to Mighty Mo.
Mighty Mo!
Our intrepid hero and fornicator, Mighty Mo, is still holding on to the long, graceful mane of his trusty speed, Al Gurak. A beautiful houri who shall remain nameless, because no one gives a name to a piece of shit, no matter how beautifully it is packaged, has just offered Mighty Mo a goblet of arrack. But has she tampered with his drink?
Shh! Don't tell the listeners that, you stupid narrator!
Oh, sorry, man. I'm not used to talking to a pile of horseshit. I will shut up for now and let you describe what happens.
Thank you, infidel. I will deal with you later.
What if I have to deal with you first?
Dear Mighty Noble, as you are back, will you drink to my superb beauty?
Give me that goblet, you vile seductress.
Females will not be allowed to show their face once I become supreme ruler of the world.
Or just Saudi Arabia will do for now. With that, he snatched the goblet from the houri's hand and gulped the fiery drink down. His face turned red as the liquor burned down into his gut.
Oi, hey!
Good. Mighty Mom, why are you speaking like a Jew? Don't you hate them?
Look below, you stupid woman. We are flying over Jerusalem, and you know what they say. When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
But Mighty Mom, there are no Romans down there, are there?
Stupid woman! That will teach you your face, woman. Now, get back to the ass of my mighty steed and stay there. I have to concentrate on landing this ungainly beast. Who's that? The Huri left Mighty Mo to his own devices. Oh, that's not right. They didn't have any devices for flying back then, did they? Anyway, he turned to face forwards again and grabbed the reins of the horse.
Come on, my beauty, it's time to land. Did you see that Jewish temple down there? Let's land down there.
Whoa, you stupid man. Stop, stop.
You can't park your horse there.
Who says?
I say. I am the keeper of the temple on the mountain. You must park over there.
5 shekels, please.
5 shekels?
Yes, 5 shekels. And if you argue any more, it will be 7 shekels.
I'm not here to...
I'm dead.
Yes, you are indeed, and death to all Jews from now on. In fact, I think I will write that down. Where did I put my Quran? Ah, yes, here it is. Let me see now, what surah was I up to? Ah, here we are. The next surah is Surah 9, verse 5. Now what should I tell my stupid followers to do? I just killed the Jew. He was a non-believer.
I know. This is my command to all Muslims. Kill the non-believers wherever you find them.
Yes, that should do. For is it not written now? So that all those who are too stupid to think for themselves, like I, Mighty Mo, do, must follow what I say. We will kill all the Jews and all the Christians.
Tune in next week to find out what Mighty Mo will do in Jerusalem. Will he walk in the footsteps of Jesus? Who knows? Come back and find out.
Allah!
Mighty Mo!
Wow. What is he going to do in Jerusalem? Good question. Okay. Coconut hooves. Tim, coconut hooves. Yes, right. I have a lot of fun making that thing. It's really good fun. I did want to talk, too, about the sticker campaign. You know, we print these little stickers, Beware Halal Food Funds Terrorists. And those stickers are turning up all over the world. Somebody sent a picture recently of a chicken with a sticker on it, the Butcher's Selection large chicken for £5 in the UK. Whoever bought that chicken got a nice little message too. It's a halal chicken. Don't buy it. Now we're also, last week I mentioned that we have a new campaign now. We're going out, every time we go shopping, we go and buy a halal product. We take it home and we open the outer packaging. We don't open the inner packaging, but we open the outer packaging. And then we take it back and tell the shop we want our money back. Now, the idea of opening the outer packaging is they can't put it back on the shelf to sell. And therefore, it's a loss to the shop. And eventually, this will get back to the companies that are actually paying the halal certification. Because if the companies, if the shops are losing money, they're going to complain to the companies who are making them lose money. And eventually these big companies are going to think, oh, maybe we don't have to pay this halal certified fee. And that's the truth. You don't have to pay to get your food certified. The Quran specifically states that all food edible by the people of the book, and that's the Jews and the Christians, can be eaten by Muslims. All the Muslims have to do to make it edible is to utter a prayer over it. And that's all they have to do. So this whole halal certification scam is just designed to get Sharia law in front of our faces just a little bit more. Well, we are resisting. If you're around anywhere around the world, just go to the shop, buy a halal product, open it up, and take it back. If we get millions and millions of products all being returned, eventually they're going to wake up. Now, we're targeting Cadbury's chocolates because, believe it or not, Cadbury's Easter eggs and Easter bunnies are halal certified. I thought Easter was a Christian holiday, a Christian tradition. So why are they halal certified? The Muslims don't eat them. Yet we are paying the Muslims for the privilege of eating our own food. Well, not anymore. We are going out to the shops and we are looking at all the labels to find out if it's halal certified. If it's not, and we're very lucky in Australia, we have a lady called Kira Lee who started a website called halalchoices.com. And she has spent a lot of time, hard work and effort going around the shops and talking to the shop owners and the manufacturers to find out which products are halal. And she's published a little booklet and she's also put a list on her website, halalchoices.com. So if you're not sure, go to her website, check that out, and find out which ones are halal certified and don't buy them, or buy one and return it. But this week and next week, and then let's keep going on and concentrate on Cadbury's. Cadbury's is owned by Mondelēza, which is the international owner of Kraft Foods. Kraft Foods owns Cadbury. So, you know, there's boxes within boxes. It's like a little Russian doll. You take one out, another one's there, and another one. And so it's very hard for us to get the message across because we have to go through so many layers. And even when we do, all they do is send us their standard font saying, oh, we do international business. We have to certify halal. Yeah, don't be such jimmies. Don't be stupid. There is no reason for any Western company to register any product halal. Everything is halal. Even the air that we breathe is halal for a Muslim, unfortunately. Wouldn't it be nice if it wasn't? They'd stop breathing. Now, I'm going to have another break, and I think Kel's got a great song lined up. It's called Gypsy. Oh, I love this song. Thank you. Yeah, that's a great song, isn't it? They're brothers called Black Violin, and they play some fantastic music, really nice stuff. So I'd say go out there and buy their albums. They're really worthwhile. I'm just looking in the chat room, and I see that we've got Agador, Bigfoot, Tim Cat Strangler, Dodgy Dave. Hello, Dodgy. We've got guest 1,799 and 1866. Hey, how are you? If you've got any questions or you'd like to have a talk to me, please have a chat with me. But in the meantime, I want to talk a little bit about the problems that are going on over in the UK. And this was inspired by a video I saw, an interview between Michael Corran and Gavin Bobby. Now, if you don't know who Gavin Bobby is, he's a UK lawyer who's been a fantastically successful mosque buster. And he's coming over here now. Actually, he's here now to attend the Sion conference in Melbourne this week. Now, Sion has been put on by Q Society and Pamela Geller and Gavin Bobby and a number of other coming over here to have a big conference in Melbourne to talk about the problems of Islam and explain how we can fight back. And Gavin has, I think, had 16 out of 18 mosques disapproved. So when they apply for a permit to build a mosque, he goes in and fights them. And the courts say, no, you can't have a mosque there. But he's much more than that. His group, Law and Freedom, fights against Islam in many different ways. And he's pointed out that UK Muslim child pimping in the UK is 200 times higher than perpetrators in any other group. So if you're a Muslim, you have a 200% higher chance of being a child pimper, child sexual molester, than any other group at all. The Poles don't cause any problems, the Germans, the others that get into the UK. But poor old UK is getting overrun. And until we stand up and say it's time to stop, I'm afraid the problem will continue. Now, when you consider that Muslims are only 4% of the population, and yet they're 200 times more likely to rape a white English woman, you've got to wonder. Now, in Australia, our Muslim population is almost 2.2% at the last census. Could be higher by now. It's probably about 2.5 because they breed like rabbits. And as soon as they start getting a, as soon as they grow in numbers, they start causing problems, and that's what's going on in the UK now. The Tower Hamlets in London, they put out a proclamation saying, if you sell alcohol, you will be punished. Well, who do they think they are? These are not British people. They come into the UK. And they start telling people what they can drink, get out of it. You try that over here in Australia, you'll be in real big trouble. Now, we've come up with a nice little bumper sticker. You can find it on our website under Get Involved, Buy Your Stickers. And on the drop-down menu, you'll see their bumper stickers. And our sticker says bikini or burqa, your choice. And on the left side, we have a beautiful bikini girl. On the right side, we have a black, don't know what's underneath that. So the UK has got real problems, and it's time that the British people stood up and said, we're not going to take this anymore. And that's all it takes. All you have to do is say to yourself, I will do something, and get involved. We have a little fun here. Kel, you've got a ringtone. I believe Tim Burton made this, didn't he? Let's have a listen to it.
Yeah, this is compliments of Tim, and I just love this ringtone. I crack up every time I hear it, Mike.
Hello, infidel. Infidel, phone ringing. Oh, yes, infidel. Pick up the phone.
Would you mind emailing that to me? Because I can put it up on my website. I actually have ringtones available for download. Where are they? Ringtones, somewhere around here somewhere. Yeah, yeah.
Sure, either Tim or myself will. They're priceless.
Okay. Yeah, if you go under the main menu, get involved, and resist Islamization, I've got ringtones and fun there. So I put up a few things in that page. We've got my ringtone. Can you play my ringtone too? You have that one?
We could probably upload it into the studio. I don't know if we have it in the studio. Let me take a look here. If we don't,
yeah.
I can certainly upload it for the next show.
All right, no problem. Anyway, if you go to my website, you can download it there. And I've got it on my phone. And I tell you what, it causes a sensation, especially when you're on public transport and phone rings, and you hear this. It's quite funny. Let's see if I can play it here for you. Yeah, there we go. Suck that up, Muslims. You don't like it. Yeah, talking of which, Friday, some of us went down to Mooloolaba, which is a lovely little seaside town, and we were having a coffee at the Esplanade there, which is very pleasant. You've got the sea on one side and all the beautiful bikini girls walking up and down on the other. And we just stood up at 11 a.m. and we started singing our national anthem, Advance Australia Fair, that song you just heard. And I don't think people had heard the national anthem sung in public like that for a long time. They were just stunned. So I'd like to suggest that people all over the world just get up one day at 11 a.m. or whatever time you like and start singing the national anthem, no matter where you are. Let's get people proud of our nations. And, you know, one of the problems that we have is that a lot of people have no more pride in their countries anymore. And that's what the Muslims are drawing their strength from. We've got to stop this. We've got to get people proud of our nation, proud of our culture, proud of our civilization. We've built it over 2,000 years. It's taken us to build up to where we are today. Are we going to let these stupid Muslims take it away? I don't think so. Now, I know that Mighty Mo one day is going to get heard somewhere in Islam land, and there's going to be hell to pay. So, frankly, I don't care. If they're insulted, that's their problem. I don't care. They burn our flags. They carry signs around saying, behead the infidels. I'm an infidel. And you try to behead me, you're in big trouble. And somebody was saying to me the other day, aren't you afraid? And I said, no. Why should I be? I'm a trained... I was trained in self-defense and offense in the military, and I know there's a lot of other guys around the same as me. We've been well trained. Let's face it, we're killers if we want to be. So if any Muslim wants to come after me, he'd better be damn well armed for bear, because I'm armed for elephant. Watch it. And I really don't care what you think. Agador says, I'd sing our national anthem, Mike, but though we can carry concealed deadly weapons here in Vermont, actually using them in public is frowned upon. Well, yeah, it probably is, unless you are under grave provocation. But you're lucky. We have no guns in Australia. We've been disarmed, and this worries me a lot. So in our draft constitution that we've written, and you can download that off our website, restoreaustralia.org.au, go to downloads and you'll see their download free FNR draft constitution. And in that, we propose that every single Australian, 18 to 38, gives back service to the nation. Now, you can do this in military service, or you can do it with civil service, like becoming a an ambulance driver or a firefighter or doing something for the community. And this should be compulsory for every citizen. Now, what's the point of this? Well, if you go into the military, you will be trained in the proper handling of firearms. You'll learn how to load them, how to clean them, how to fire them, and you'll be allowed to take them back to your home. In other words, we will have a well-armed militia, a well-trained militia, able to repel invaders. I'm starting to think like a pirate here. But right now, we don't have any protection. Our military has been gutted by the Labor Party, by the Labor government, the previous one, and the Greens. They've cut down on military spending. Thankfully, our new government, the LNP, is now starting to put more money into our military. We need a good, strong military, but more than that, we need a well-armed, well-trained civilian militia, just like they have in Switzerland. And they've had that for over 100 years, and they never had any problems there, and their crime rate is unbelievably low. Why? Well, what thug is going to go into a home knowing that the homeowner is armed and ready to kill? And that's the difference. In America, you're lucky. You've got the guns. We don't. I'd like to take another break here, Kel. Have you got that song by Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, Stairway to Heaven? It's one of my favorite all-time favorite songs.
I do. I have it right here, Mike.
Oh, excellent. Would you mind playing that for me?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Hang on. Oh, you little bum. The screen jumped on me. Oh, boy, I love live radio, Mike. Here we are. Here we are.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see. There's a bit of talk going on in the chat room about this song. The original version was way too long and nowhere near as good as this one. I love this one. It was written, it was played by Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin. I think they had the London choir there or someone behind them. It's a beautiful version, and I can't get enough of it. Hotel California, oh boy, am I sick of that. Every time I got up to sing in Thailand, the Thais would always say, please play Hotel California. We're getting very close to the end of the show, so I better not digress too much. I want to talk about another problem that we face, apart from the Muslim grooming and rape of white English women and white women all over the world. Another problem is the rising traffic in forced Islamic marriage. Now, we had a case just the other day when an imam married a 12-year-old girl to a 26-year-old man with her father's consent in New South Wales here in Australia. Now, the last I heard, the age of consent was at least 16, probably 18 actually, I'm not sure. But a 12-year-old girl getting married, I don't think so. Well, they've arrested the father, sorry, they've arrested the husband. And they should have arrested the imam and the father as well and thrown them all into jail. We have another case involving a custody battle. However, a judgment has been made that questions the way Western jurisdictions interact with Sharia marriage regulations, specifically in relation to the widespread practice of conducting private, unregistered religious marriages. A Sydney Muslim girl aged 14 was forced by her parents to become the child bride of a 21-year-old man. Her mother had told her that she would get to attend theme parks and movies and eat lollies and ice cream with her new husband. Reminds me of the Muslim woman who was complaining to her husband. She said, remember when we first got married, you used to carry me up to bed every night? And he said, yes, but you were only 12 years old then. Oh dear. Now, in 2008, the then Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, and Nicholas Phillips, Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales, both dhimmis, suggested that the UK could consider, in Lord Phillips' words, embracing Sharia law, because there is no reason why Sharia law or any other religious code should not be the basis for meditation or other forms of alternative dispute resolution. Williams commented, it's not as if we're bringing in an alien and rival system. Really? How ignorant are these two idiots? I'm sorry, but Islam is a very alien and ignorant ideology. We will never accept it here in Australia, and we will fight. And if our young girls are being enticed into marriage with promises of movies and lollies and ice cream, I think we can see the mentality of these people. Now, the marriage, was, of course, of this 14-year-old girl was never registered with the state. It would have been impossible to do so because the girl was too young to marry under Australian law. But a particularly troubling aspect of her story is that she reported her predicament to her school teacher, who under Australian law was a mandatory reporter of child sex abuse. But it seems that no report was made and no intervention attempted. Now, I've run across this too in the schools here. My daughter was going to one high school here recently, last year, and she kept on getting beaten up by a bully, a couple of them. Eventually, she got very badly beaten up, so badly that I went to the police and filed an assault charge, and the bully was arrested, and she had to go before the youth justice system, which at first I thought was quite good. But I went to the school to complain, and they said, oh, yes, we know about that. It's our job to fix it up. But they never did anything. They just mouthed the words. They never did anything. And I'm going to name this school. It was the Mountain Creeks High School in the Sunshine Coast. So those people down there at the Mountain Creek High School had better wake up, because I will not stand for this. Now, the sad thing is that bully has gone back to that school. I took my daughter out of the school and sent her to a better one. But that bully is back in that school, and guess what? Last week, she beat up another girl. She has not learned her lesson, even though she went before the youth justice system. I'm considering right now what to do. Unfortunately, I don't have many options because I'm not directly involved with the second beating. But these women are a bit of a problem. But the point here is I'm talking about responsibility. And when our so-called leaders, our community leaders, start saying stupid things like Sharia law is no problem, we should let it in, it's only, you know, it's quite compatible, then I think we need to stop these people from even appearing in public. They're just too stupid to breathe the same oxygen as us. And luckily, Judge Harmon, the judge who was in charge of the case, invited the authority to take matters further. The groom, in this case, of the 14-year-old girl marrying the Muslim man, he could have been charged by the police with sexual offences against the child and placed on the sex register, offenders register. He and the girl's father, who in accordance with Islamic tradition would have been the two parties to the marriage contract, could also be charged with trafficking offences. And there would almost certainly have been an exchange of money, what they call the MAR, M-A-H-R, handed over by the man to the girl or her father in accordance with Islamic law. Did anything happen? No. And yet if an Australian man molests a woman, he goes on the sex offenders registry and he goes to jail. So why are we making exceptions for the Muslims? I don't think that that's, we've got to stop this. It's not right. And if we don't have governments that are willing to step up to the mark, then maybe it's time for us to change the government. And I'm working now to amend our constitution so that Australian people, the voters, have the right to have a say in how we are governed. And I'm glad to say that the momentum for this is growing. More and more people are coming on board. I now have quite a lot of followers on Facebook. And I think that the word is spreading. And if we can get enough people behind us, we can march on Parliament and say, you must change the constitution to give us the power. We, the people, want the power to decide our own future, not some political party run by a group of old men in a back room who make all the decisions. It's not working. The two-party system is divisive. It's not working. And it's allowing things like Islam and forced marriages and child rape and halal certification and all the other terrible things that we're seeing in our society today. All of this is going on with the tacit approval of the political parties. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not good enough. And we're going to stop it. Restore Australia is standing up. And I'm glad to say that we have so many wonderful supporters. I know that a small number of people are coming up from Brisbane. That's 100 kilometres away. They're coming up today for the demonstration this afternoon. So thank you for that. And I know that quite a few people on the Sunshine Coast are going to come along at 3:30 outside the Kawana Waters Hotel car park. And we'll all be meeting there and I'll be handing out the placards and explaining the rules. After I've spoken to the police, we will have to walk within a certain area and we won't be able to interrupt traffic flow. But that's no problem. We'll be on the footpath and we won't be interfering with anybody. Now, we've also, we're going there peacefully, but unfortunately, I know that the lefties sometimes get a little bit hot-headed and they do get violent. So I'm hoping that nothing happens today. We will be prepared for it. And what I will be telling the demonstrators in our group is if they start causing any problems, we walk away and we get in our cars and leave. We don't want any trouble. But if any Muslims come along, we'll see. I'm not going to have any trouble with the Muslims. And if they want to start trouble, then I don't think there's going to be any Muslims there today. But you never know. Anyway, if your daughter changes her behavior, maybe, just maybe, she's being groomed by a Muslim. Be careful. There was a Dr. Bilal Phillips, a British imam, who said, the Prophet Muhammad practiced marriage to prepubescent girls. It wasn't abuse or exploitation. It was marriage. I mean, What sort of a person says that? A young girl of that age doesn't have a clue. She doesn't know what marriage is or true love. She knows the love of her parents, but she certainly doesn't know love of a man. Come on, that is just awful. And that's what Islam brings to the world today. It must stop. All right, I think that's enough. I've ranted on, and I want to thank Kel and everybody in the chat room, Agador, Bigfoot, Cat Strangler 101, Dodgy Dave and Eric Pyle, and Cat Girl. Hello, Cat Girl. How are you? I want to thank you all for listening in. I know there are many more out there who are listening, and a lot of people are getting in touch with me and telling me that they enjoy the show. I'm very pleased to hear that. A special message to all our boys over there in Afghanistan. You stay safe and listen in again next week. Thank you all very much, and stay safe, stay strong, and ban Islam. Well, cheers.
This is Mike Holt, signing off for another week. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next week. And this is a warning to Islam. We have you in our sights.
Allahu Akbar.
Don't you come back no more.
I didn't understand.
Don't you